Case number 12-1242, BNP Paribas Energy Trading GP, formerly known as Fortis Energy Marketing and Trading GP, petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Smith for the petitioner, Mr. Soper for the respondent, and Mr. Thompson for the intervener.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning.
My name is Gordon Smith. I'm counsel for petitioner BNPP Energy Trading GP. With me, I have my partner, Matt Rick, and we also have counsel for intervener South Jersey Resources Corporation. It's Ira McDell. This is a cost allocation case. It involves Transcontinental Gas Pipeline's WSS service, which is an open access storage service. The issue is the lawfulness of the pipeline's proposal to allocate 100% of the costs of certain base gas purchases to one storage customer, BNPP Energy. BNPP Energy acquired its capacity by way of permanent capacity release in March 1 of 2005. As a replacement storage customer under the Commission's open access regime and Transco's tariff, BNPP Energy was obligated to pay Transco's generally applicable storage rate, and it paid that for almost a year and a half until the pipeline filed a new general Section 4 rate case. In that case, the pipeline proposed for the first time to charge BNPP Energy a specific storage rate that was nearly three times higher than the system rate. It also proposed to charge intervener South Jersey Resources Group its own specific storage rate, which was nearly four times the generally applicable storage rate. Keep in mind, this is a single storage facility, a single service, and it's provided on a unitary basis. There are no incremental facilities at issue here. The higher rates reflected the cost of certain base gas purchases that the pipeline made to replace volumes that were withdrawn by the releasing customers. Those were PSE&G and South Jersey Gas Company. Those withdrawals were made under Section 8.2 of the rate schedule, the storage rate schedule, which was a legacy provision from the original storage certificate order and settlement that allowed certain historical shippers to withdraw base gas volumes. The volumes are delineated in a tariff sheet upon cancellation of their or termination of their contract, or as the rate sheet was subsequently amended for a permanent release of capacity. BNPP Energy, of course, objected to the filing, and we ultimately litigated the case after in an evidentiary hearing before the administrative law judge. Following the hearing, after briefing and following the hearing, the judge rejected the proposal. Outright, the judge found the proposal to be unjust, unreasonable, and unduly discriminatory. And these are important points. The judge found, based on the evidence, that the evidence, undisputed evidence, demonstrated that all base gas volumes supported all customers' entitlements equally and indivisibly. This has always been the pipeline's practice of having a single historic base gas cost reflected in its rates. The judge acknowledged there was some causal link between the BNPP Energy and South Jersey's acquisition of capacity, but held that they were not the sole but-for cause of the purchases. And
the question presumably is what is causing the aggregate burden on Transco, and I take it that the new purchases by your client cause it in the same way that the continuation of purchases by the historic customers cause it. Right? I mean, I think that's your position.
Well, our position is that our entitlements, our service entitlements, our entitlements and the historic entitlements create the same demands on the system on an equal basis.
Okay.
Yes. Just to be clear, the reason for the costs were incurred was because the releasing customer withdrew the gas and Transco was obligated to replace it. It didn't. The release itself occurred before. So,
there was some suggestion, I guess it was a Transco filing, that even if your clients had not stood in the shoes of the previous shippers, that Transco would nevertheless have to purchase, 1.4 decotherms?
Yes, sir.
And the staff recommended allocating 1.4 to the historic shippers and the remainder to your clients. And that was rejected by both the ALJ and by FERC. Are you arguing that for that proposition? Are you embracing the staff's proposal?
No, not as an end result. Let me explain.
It's 100% or nothing.
Yeah. Well, that's what the pipeline filed. Staff's proposal technically was a Section 5 proposal. The fact that the 1.4 that you mentioned, those volumes are indisputably required. If you do want to try to do a direct allocation, those are indisputably required to maintain the total service entitlements of all the historic customers. The remainder would equate to our level of service entitlements, BNPPs. So if you were to try to do a pure or correct direct allocation, you would do it on staff's basis. The ALJ rejected that, though, finding that because of the characteristics of the field, it was impossible to allocate any specific base gas purchase to anybody's entitlement. He said it made no sense to have those rates are better for us, of course, on a monetary basis. But he felt that those were unjust and reasonable too, and we would not disagree with that. Obviously faced with a proposition, do we have the pipeline's proposal or staff's? Staff's would be better. I think that would be the worst case for us, I think.
Can we assume you're right on the cost causation principle and argument? Doesn't the fact that the historic shippers have, during the whole historic period and continuing now, they are, every period of time, they are foregoing their right to stop taking service and to exercise their right to extract their gas at this low price. So are they not paying, in a real economic sense, a price for every period of service equivalent to the difference between the market value, well, it's actually the return on the proceeds of the difference between the market value of their gas and what they're able to extract it for?
Well, yes, that would be part of the calculus I believe those shippers would have to make when they, if they decide to terminate their contract or renew it. Most of the contracts...
Yes, but what I'm suggesting is that they have in fact been and will be in the future paying more than the, in an economic sense, they'll be paying more than the out-of-pocket cost of what they're charged under the tariff.
No, I would disagree with that because the base gas entitlements, the purchase option levels, that was not base gas that was actually supplied by those customers. The pipeline supplied that gas. They never had any ownership interest in that gas.
No, but they have a right under the original deal They have a right to extract it when they cease taking service at a price which is way below market values. So they are, every period involved, they are giving up the return on what they would make from exercising that sort of package of rights, terminating service and extracting their gas.
Yes, Your Honor.
I say their gas. I understand that that's an oversimplification. You object to that, but it's their gas in the sense, in the economic sense, that by terminating and exercising their option at the low price, it can become their gas.
Yes, Your Honor, and they have a preferential right, a special right that my clients do not have,
right,
to withdraw gas at a discounted price. The judge recognized that. I think we quantified that at trial, $140 million in aggregate. The judge specifically ruled that the fact that they have this preferential right to withdraw gas does not justify treating our clients on a discriminatory basis vis-a-vis the actual rates. It's a specific ruling, and that was not addressed, I don't believe, by the...
No, I think you're quite right as to what the commission didn't address. But I'm just trying to sort of get a fix on the overall picture, and it does seem to me that it is relevant in an economic sense and in terms of incentives for both sets of customers as to what the actual cost to them of continuing to be customers is.
Yes, our clients don't have that right, although we'd like to have it, and we pay the higher rates on top of that. So we don't think that the existence of the special purchase right justifies the discriminatory rate treatment.
I understand that.
I have reserved 5 minutes. I have just one more point to make. And it has to do with the subsidy aspect of the ruling. The facts of the case, and we touched on this earlier, the facts demonstrated that approximately 41% of the base gas volumes were needed to support the historic entitlements, the remainder my client's entitlements, the relative levels. The commission recognized that, the judge recognized that and ruled that unquestionably imposed a subsidy upon the BNPP in South Jersey in favor of the historic customers. And that was one reason that the pipeline's proposal to allocate 100% of the costs was unjust and unreasonable. And the commission ignored that argument completely in its order on rehearing. The council petitioner and council for staff and for the commission and for the petitioners also ignored that in a brief. So it's completely unaddressed. So even if you are inclined to accept the contention that somehow our clients are responsible for this direct, should be held responsible on a direct basis for this allocation of costs, we still have this subsidy issue that has not been addressed. So I think for that reason alone, it's appropriate to vacate the orders and remand them. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. I think the first thing we have to keep in mind here is that this is a Section 4 case. Under Section 4 of the Natural Gas Act, as the court has often made clear to the commission, once the pipeline proposes a reasonable allocation of costs, if the commission finds it reasonable, that's the end of the matter. It doesn't...
Well, just and reasonable and non-discriminatory.
Just and reasonable and non-discriminatory. Right. Means, right. Yes. And that's exactly what happened here. And as the commission also pointed out, relying on this court's precedent, when you look at whether something can be rolled in, whether a cost should be rolled in or a cost should be allocated incrementally, it's usually a gray area. It's a continuum. And that's really a question of fact for the commission.
Why didn't the commission respond to the analogy raised by the petitioner to the addition of a facility in an electrical context, which provides service for all the customers?
Well,
I have two answers for that,
Your Honor. First of all, the commission, by the time it got to the question of whether the standard generator interconnection rule had any applicability, it had described this case in some detail and said, look, this is a fact-driven case. And now the petitioners raised this electric...
Facts drive cases, but they drive them within a set of principles.
Right.
And the analogy that the petitioner was asserting was a principle that where a whole set of customers impose a cost which is exactly the same except in terms of the quantity that they're taking, they should bear the costs equally.
Well, I think that the commission was aware. I think it felt it didn't have to go any further with that. It had discussed the cost causation and why it thought the cost causation was reasonable.
Yeah, but the point being made by the petitioner was that this reliance on the sequence was fundamentally irrelevant to the cost causation.
Well, it's,
and the commission never really responded to that.
I don't think that's true, Your Honor. I mean, first of all, let me go back to the electric rulemaking that was cited by the petitioner. The commission did give it short shrift, and I think reasonably so under the circumstances, because it had discussed in great detail why these rates should be incremental. It was reasonable for these rates to be incremental rather than rolled in. If you look at the actual paragraphs of Order 2000A that the petitioner cited to the commission, what they actually say is that incremental rate is just fine. In fact, it's the higher of an incremental rate or a rolled-in rate because it wants to prevent subsidies by the existing customers to the new customers. So I think if the commission had gotten into that, it wouldn't have helped petitioner much. I think the commission did discuss cost causation in as more than sufficient detail.
Loads of detail, but it was all based on the premise that what's controlling is the sequence of events, not the question of what is necessary to provide the service that all customers are receiving.
Well, first of all, it did say that the proximate cause, and this is maybe in terms of sequence of events, but the proximate cause was indeed that the new customers created the need for this new base gas. Secondly, the historic shippers were getting the same service they always got. Their service didn't change. The same service they were paying the rolled-in rates for. Third,
yes,
when you
that,
look at the context...
That doesn't answer the cost causation question, though.
Well, this court said...
they're still getting the same.
It answers the discrimination question.
All it shows is the sequence.
But this court has described...
And I think everyone agrees that in terms of sequence, yes, the petitioner came later. But the question is, so what?
Well, there wouldn't be any need for Transco to have bought this gas, except that the capacity was released by the two star customers. These customers came in, and Transco was obligated to buy the gas. You can look at it as a question of sequence, but this court has used proximate cause language, and the commission cited it, Kayan Energy, has used proximate cause language to determine whether cost causation is met.
Is Kayan Energy a situation where the only support for the cost causation is sequence?
Well, I don't concede that the only question is sequence. There was this gas would not have been needed but for these new customers coming in.
Well, it also would not have been needed if some of the historic customers had reduced their use, right?
Well, yes, that may be true, but that's not the case.
We observed...
It's a fully subscribed... I'm sorry.
We observed in town of Norwood that there's no economic difference between the new customer or a customer who adds demand and a customer who could have subtracted demand but doesn't.
Well, this is a fully subscribed storage area and it doesn't seem to be any ability to reduce demand. In fact, these contracts didn't expire. The only way that the new customers could come in fact, was because capacity was released by these historic customers.
That's right.
This commission found this is a fully subscribed field. And in fact, that's one of the benefits they cited for the new customers coming in. They were able to get service on this field that they wouldn't have been able to get otherwise.
It remains the case that the historic customers could have reduced their usage of the field or cut it out altogether, right? And in terms of the fundamental purpose of the cost causation principle, they should be receiving the same economic signals as the petitioner here.
Well, I don't think petitioner raised it in those terms, but the fact is I don't think they can reduce their service. It's a fully subscribed field, and these historic customers are local distribution companies who need the service for their end users. But I don't think there's anything, in terms of cost causation, I think it was reasonable to say what caused the new gas to be bought, what were the benefits to the new customers. All customers, the Star customers, had the same benefit as ever. The Star customers also were paying rolled-in rates, as you pointed out, Judge Williams, that reflected their essential support for the field from day one.
But that is a very different argument from what the commission ended up resting on.
Well, the commission certainly was...
I think there was available to the commission an argument that, in fact, the historic customers were paying, in an economic sense, more than the charges reflected in the tariff, and that they're continuing to do that going forward. But the commission never made an argument like that, although there's some language that's remotely comparable to that.
Well, the commission certainly was spent a lot of time discussing the fact that the historic customers had relinquished their sales rights to the gas to allow it to be used for base gas, and that was a sacrifice that made them not comparable to the new customers. And certainly
they never really explained how that distinction worked in terms of the rate issue before the commission.
Well, I think that the question, it was in two ways, really, Your Honor. I think, first of all, it showed that the new customers and the historic customers were not similarly situated. And secondly, that the historic customers were paying a rate that reflected the history of the field and the fact that they provided essential support, and they did supply the gas in that they relinquished their sales right to the gas at a time of a severe natural gas shortage. So it was certainly, I think, reasonable for the commission to look at that in terms of discrimination and cost causation. I think the key is, maybe you're not buying this, but if the commission was faced with, under Section 4, the pipeline coming in and saying, well, here's what we're going to do. It's an incremental rate because we're buying the gas for these customers. And the commission believed under Section 4, once that was reasonable, and under Section 4, once we had a reasonable proposal from the pipeline company, as this court has told us over and over again, we are constrained to accept it. There could be other reasonable ways to do it, and in fact, the commission said in the rehearing order, we're not saying that the way the judge decided to do it was unreasonable. It might be that there are many reasonable ways to do it, but once the pipeline comes in with a reasonable way to do it, we have to accept it or we get into a Section 5 situation.
I did not see a genuine dispute between the parties over the respective roles of Sections 4 and 5.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. I think
counsel will correct me if I got that wrong.
The predecessors could not exercise their contract right unless they had somebody waiting in the wings to pick up their allocation. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Because their contracts had not expired.
Yes.
It's odd. South Jersey. It was a South Jersey affiliate.
Right.
That left. And another subsidiary just stepped in their shoes.
Commission observed that South Jersey did quite well out of this transaction.
Yeah.
I do want to make two more points. One, I want to answer your question, Judge Randolph. As petitioner indicated, it's going for an all or nothing allocation here. It didn't push this allocating it somehow by percentages. The judge ruled that was not possible. The commission affirmed that it wasn't.
It's not accurate, though, to say, is it? I don't know that the commission ever said this, that except for the fact that BNP Paribas and South Jersey's took over and stood in the shoes of the previous shippers. If that hadn't happened, then, and that's the reason that the Transco had to buy this 3.3 million decatherms. That Transco would have had to make a purchase even if they didn't step in.
Commission addressed this specifically at footnote 91, paragraph 65. It's a JA 138. And it said, that may be, but the only way that these two historic customers could exit the system was by permanently releasing their full capacity and exercising their right to take the gas with them. So that's the situation we have. I'll say also that it may well be a reasonable way to parse it out. If you somehow could parse it out, which the judge felt you couldn't, maybe that would be another reasonable way to do it, but it doesn't make the Transco proposal unreasonable. And the last point I want to make, I see my time is up. The Commission never really discussed this much in terms of subsidies, and that's it did come up a little bit in the petitioner's first brief, and it came up substantially in the petitioner's reply brief. I think if you look in the request for rehearing that was filed with the Commission, the issue was never really raised in terms of subsidies, so the Commission didn't get into it that way. But I think the other point about subsidies is it's just another way of talking about cost causation. If you, of course, the petitioners think, well, we're subsidizing the existing shippers by paying an incremental rate. The existing shippers, the historic shippers, think, well, we're paying a rolled-in rate. Why should we subsidize these new guys coming in who haven't sacrificed anything for the field and have them pay a rolled-in rate. So it cuts both ways.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I am Michael Thompson. I'm here on behalf of the interveners supporting the respondent. That's Transcontinental Gas Pipeline Company, the WSS Customer Group, and the Transco Municipal Group. I'd like to turn, I guess, to a couple of points that have come up in the discussion this morning. First, on the issue of the subsidy claim that petitioner has tried to resurrect in this appeal. I think if you look closely, in particular, at the initial decision, that claim of subsidy comes directly out of the ALJ's finding, which no one disputes, that all of the replacement base gas is fully integrated in the operation of the Washington storage field. I.e., his finding that all base gas supports all top gas entitlements. And he reasoned from that because of that integration aspect of the base gas that's at issue here, everyone should be paying the same amount, and therefore to require BNP to pay, or Peribas to pay a higher rate, would be causing them to subsidize the other shippers. It's a couple of points. First, this Court's precedents establish pretty firmly that operational or physical integration of new facilities or a new investment is not necessarily a determinant factor of cost allocation. And I'd point the Court in particular to Transco v. FERC involving the electric power reimbursement charges for the Cherokee Expansion Project compressors. There the pipeline had proposed rolled-in electric power charges, i.e. to spread those electric power costs across all the shippers on the system. And the Commission ruled that that was unjust and unreasonable in that case and told the pipeline to allocate those costs of the particular Cherokee project compressors to the Cherokee shippers only, and did that under Section 5, and this Court affirmed. And I think the action the Commission has taken here is entirely consistent not only with that precedent but with the Court's precedents, which the Commission's counsel referred to, that has established the distinction between Sections 4 and Section 5. This was a proposal by the pipeline. The Commission expressly found that it fell in the continuum where either rolled in or an incremental cost allocation would be just and reasonable, and that, I believe, on the record in this case, was well within the Commission's discretion under the statute.
Why does Transco care?
Transco has a refund obligation in this case, Your Honor. If the petitioner prevails, and the Commission ultimately were to rule that that these charges should be rolled in under the settlement of this underlying rate proceeding, Transco would owe refunds to Peribas.
And it wouldn't have any recovery from the historic shippers who, by definition,
for the retroactive period, that's correct, Your Honor.
I see.
Yeah. I guess on the point of there being no economic difference, if I may, I see my time has just run out, but
you
I wanted
to finish your sentence.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to just point out that we noted in our brief, I'll try to get you the page number quickly here. I'm sorry, but we cited to a Pacific Gas Transmission order which resulted in this court's decision in Washington Water Power v. FERC, where the commission held that replacement shippers are similarly situated with incrementally priced expansion shippers rather than with historical shippers, which I think also supports the commission's determination in this case. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Did Mr. Smith have any time? Oh, go ahead. Didn't realize you would say that.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll jump around here quickly. On the electric issue, yes, the commission didn't address that point at all, and we think that was intolerably mute.
Well, it addressed it. It just said it wasn't relevant.
Yes, well, we think that they didn't address it with the requisite specificity required to pass the threshold for reasoned decision-making. There was no record evidence at all with respect to the burdens, and we talked a bit about the burdens maybe that the pipeline had gone, that the customer group had gone to with respect to the curtailment periods. There was no record evidence provided on that. And the commission didn't, in its order, didn't rely, I think, extensively on that. In terms of the cost causation, Judge Randolph, the alternative for the releasing shippers would have been to allow their contracts to expire. They did not have to assign them, and that was one of the problems with the whole base gas purchase provision, is that almost all of the contracts have expired and were in year-to-year rollover, so any historic customer could leave and trigger a rate increase. And that's one of the problems, one of the inherent problems that created this rate disparity, this unjust rate disparity that we're dealing with. The subsidy issue, we disagree strongly. The judge ruled, this is a quote, it unquestionably imposes a subsidy that BNPP Energy in South Jersey would have to pay for the benefit of the pre-existing customers. And we raised that, it was in evidence, and the commission completely ignored it. And so at a minimum, if
and that's characterization that fundamentally the term turns on the proposition that the rates weren't just and reasonable, right? I mean, if the rates are just and reasonable, then pretty much by definition there isn't a subsidy, right?
Correct. The rates are we've demonstrated, as the judge held, the rates are unjust and unreasonable and unduly discriminatory.
There was some point, and I forget exactly what it was, my colloquy with Mr. Sofert, which I said counsel will correct me on that, but I can't remember what it was.
He was wrong. He was wrong. Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll go back to the record.
Thank you. Before we adjourn, Mr. Sofert, we understand that this was your last argument before this court, and that after some 25 years with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, you'll be retiring.
That's true.
After having appeared as counsel of record, I gather, some 60 times.
Sometimes
which is
better than others.
Well, I should add that that this is a number that I'm sure my colleague, Judge Williams, who is our most avid FERC colleague, probably even he envies. But all kidding aside, I know that I can speak for our entire court. Thank you for your superb service. We wish you well in your retirement, and if you're ever so inclined, welcome back anytime. I'm sure we have many fascinating FERC cases in our future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you from all of us. Did you like that? Something?
I just wanted to add that I looked up your first case with us in the hope that I was on the panel and possibly even wrote, but sad to say it was a case that existed entirely without me, even though I was on the court at the time.
How unimaginable.
You were on my third case, though.
I see. Okay.
I remember that clearly.
All right.
Well, again, thank you for
thank you.
All
thank
your
you
years of superb service.
Thank
it's
you.
Been a pleasure for all of us.